भक्ति बनाते स्वामी के नाम ने नमस्ते सरस्वती देव गौरवाणी बिठाने विशेष शुभ हरि पश्चिशा दिशिठाने ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय Reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 10, Chapter 70, Lord Krishna's Daily Activities, reading texts 32 through 37 today. So we'll do text 32 together. Responsibly, I mean. Sri Shugavacha Rajadute Bruvatyevam Devarshi Paramadhyuti Vibratinga Jitabharam Pradurasi Jitaravi Sri Shukuvacha Rajadute Bravatyevam Devarshi Paramajuti Vibrat Binga Jitabharam Pradurasi Jitaravi Sri Shukuvacha Rajadute Bravatyevam Devarshi Paramajuti Vibratinga Jitabharam Radurasi Dhyataravi Sri Shukuvacha, Shukadeva Goswami said, Raja of the kings, Dute, the messenger, Pruvati, having spoken, Evam, in this manner, Deva of the demigods, Rishi, the sage Narada Muni, Parama, supreme, Duti, whose effulgence, Vibrat, wearing, Pinga, yellowish, Jata, of matted locks, Bharam, a mass, Pradurasit, appeared, Yata, like, Ravi, the sun. Translation by the disciples of Srila Prabhupada. Shukadeva Goswami said, when the king's messenger had thus spoken, the sage of the demigods, Narada, suddenly appeared, bearing a mass of golden matted locks on his head. The supremely effulgent sage entered like the brilliant sun. So did everybody know Narada Muni has yellow golden hair? Interesting, huh? Pinga, yellowish. He's usually depicted, you know, with dark hair in pictures. Okay, we'll read 33 through 37. I'll just do the English. Lord Krishna is the worshipable master of even planetary rulers like Lord Brahma and Lord Shiva. Yet as soon as he saw that Narada Muni had arrived, he joyfully stood up along with his ministers and secretaries to receive the great sage and offer his respectful obeisances by bowing his head. Report, this translation is based on Srila Prabhupada's Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The word muda indicates that Lord Krishna was delighted to see that Narada had arrived. 34. After Narada had accepted the seat offered to him, Lord Krishna honored the sage according to scriptural injunctions and gratifying him with reverence, his reverence, spoke the following truthful and pleasing words. Lord Krishna said, it is certain that today the three worlds have attained freedom from all fear, for that is the influence of such a great personality as you, who travel at will throughout all the worlds. There is nothing unknown to you within God's creation. Therefore, please tell us what the Pandavas intend to do. Text 37. Sri Narada said, I have seen many times the insurmountable power of your Maya, O Almighty One, by which you bewilder even the creator of the universe, Brahma. O all-encompassing Lord, it does not surprise me that you disguise yourself by your own energies while moving among the created beings, as a fire covers its own light with smoke. Purport. When Lord Krishna questioned Narada Muni about the intentions of the Pandavas, the sage replied that the Lord is himself all-powerful and all-knowing, even to the extent that he can bewilder the creator of the universe, Brahma. Narada understood that Lord Krishna desired to kill Jarasandha and was thus beginning to arrange for this pastime by inquiring from Narada about the Pandavas' intentions. Understanding the Lord's own intention, Narada was not astonished when Lord Krishna humbly requested information from him. Om Gyanatimanandasya Gananjana Salakaya Chakshurin Taminatasmai Sri Hare Namaha Panchakalpatrubhyascha Kripasindubhyevacha Patitano Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha. So we're continuing the intrigue here leading up to the killing of Jarasandha. The kings have sent their messenger to plead their case to Lord Krishna. After hearing all of that, there's really not an immediate response, but then Narada Muni comes into the picture. So it might look as though now the story is going in another direction, but actually Narada Muni's entrance is all part of this pastime, which will lead to Krishna delivering these kings and killing Jarasandha. So first of all, Krishna asks Narada Muni about the Pandavas' intention. And what we see here, and is explained by this verse in purport, is that Krishna is working through Narada Muni and at the same time disguising his own intention. So Krishna has a plan to kill Jarasandha and liberate the kings, but he first asks Narada about the intentions of the Pandavas. But of course, it's explained that he's omniscient. You know, he knows everything. He's omnipotent. And therefore, he fully knows this. He already knows the answer, but he's asking Narada Muni, praising Narada Muni and, you know, giving him all types of worship, and asking Narada Muni, well, tell me what's going on. So he asks Narada the intention of the Pandavas. And of course, Narada understands Krishna's intention. He understands something about the plan of the Lord, being a great pure devotee. And therefore, not only does he understand these intentions, but he praises them because he understands fully what Krishna is doing. So he indicates he knows the plan, and he says, you are disguising this. He says, you disguise your energies as a fire covers its own light with smoke. So, of course, the fire generates heat, light, generates the heat, and the light of the fire, but then it also generates smoke or creates smoke, and the smoke might cover the light of the fire. But actually, the fire is actually the one or the entity that has created the smoke. This is example that's given here, that Krishna, by his own energies, covers himself so that others cannot see him. Another example that's often given that Prabhupada has given is that the sun, by its rays on the ocean, evaporates water, which creates a cloud. That cloud then will often cover the sun. So the sun is covered from our vision, but it's actually the sun that has created the cloud that is covering the vision. So Krishna is like that. Krishna, through his Mahamaya and Yogamaya energies, creates this illusion or creates this covering so that we cannot see him, and we certainly cannot always see his intentions. But of course, Narada Muni understands these intentions, and he's going along with it, basically, and saying, all right, you can use me, and I'll give you information, even though you know this yourself, because that's the pastime that you want to enact at this point. He also mentions that Krishna acts as a human. He says, while moving among created beings. So he understands that Krishna is taking the role of a king in this particular Leela, and so that he's not fully showing his omnipotent and omniscient nature. And he also indicates that he has complete control over the covering potency, that he's not affected by it, just as the fire in that example, or the sun, is not affected by the cloud or the smoke that it creates. Further, he gives the example, and he gives some historical references or references in Krishna's pastimes of how he has this great power to cover even the greatest living entities, even the most intelligent and the first of all created beings, Lord Brahma. So Lord Brahma, who is the creator of this universe, who is the head of our sampradaya, who is this great personality, this great devotee, even he is covered by the covering potency of Krishna, Krishna's power of illusion. So we have these examples, of course, in the Brahma Vimoha Lila, how Brahma, who tried to steal the calves and the coward boys, was completely covered by the Yogamaya power of the Lord. When Krishna expanded himself as all of the calves and all the coward boys, Brahma became bewildered because he had left them in the cave, and then he saw them all out performing their activities, and then further he saw that every one of them turned into a Vishnu form. And so there was a point where Brahma became so bewildered that he finally just had to surrender to Krishna and admit to his superior mystic powers. And then, of course, another time, Krishna called Lord Brahma, or I think Vishnu or Narayan called Lord Brahma to him. And when he came, the gatekeeper said, who is this? And Lord Brahma said, it's Lord Brahma. I've come to see you. The message came back. He said, which Brahma? He says, what do you mean, which Brahma? So anyway, he came in. He showed him that, of course, our Lord Brahma in this universe has four heads. But there were many, many Lord Brahmas from all the universes with many, many heads, some with hundreds, some with thousands, some with millions. So again, Brahma became a little bewildered and humbled by the great potency and power of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So it's described here, the word is simply given as Maya. It says that by your Maya, you're able to cover so many things, that you're able to disguise yourself by your own energies, by this power of Maya. Now, we often see that this is broken down into Yogamaya and Mahamaya, the two sort of similar potencies of Krishna that have this capacity for bewildering and covering the living entities. So this is explained by Srila Prabhupada in many places. In 10.1.25, Prabhupada says, in the spiritual world, the Lord's potency works as Yogamaya, and in the material world, that same potency works as Mahamaya, exactly as electricity works in both a heater and a cooler. Well, it's a very interesting example, isn't it? Because, you know, electricity can create heat and can also create cooling in an air conditioner, refrigeration. Two very opposite effects, but yet from the same energetic source. Then in the end notes to the first chapter of the 10th canto, Srila Prabhupada explains, in other words, the entire creation has two divisions, transcendental or spiritual and material. Yogamaya manages the spiritual world, and by her partial expansion as Mahamaya, she manages the material world. As stated in Narada Pancharatna, Mahamaya is a partial expansion of Yogamaya, bewildering the conditioned souls and liberating the devotees are both functions belonging to Yogamaya. So it's almost as though there's two transformations of the same energy, one we call Yogamaya and one we call Mahamaya. And Yogamaya has several purposes. There's actually many different ways that Yogamaya manifests and helps Krishna in performing his activities and his pastimes in both the material world and the spiritual world. First of all, Yogamaya helps to arrange Krishna's pastimes in Vrindavan. We know that this Purnamasi is an expansion of Yogamaya, and she helps to arrange all the different pastimes. Also, Yogamaya covers the most intimate associates of Krishna in his different leelas so that they can enjoy their particular rasa without interference, with actually understanding that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. An example is given in the Damodar Leela, how Mother Yashoda became covered by Yogamaya so that she could fully appreciate her maternal relationship with Krishna. Because, you know, if she, you know, when she was looking in Krishna's mouth and she's seeing all, you know, the universes and all the planets, and she's realizing that my child is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, this really interferes with this wonderful, loving Vatsalya Rasa. So again, it's described that she's covered by Yogamaya so she can, again, enjoy that particular relationship. It's also described that Yogamaya covers materialistic persons from understanding Krishna. Sometimes we think this is the job of Mahamaya, but it's also mentioned as Yogamaya, such as in Bhagavad Gita 7.25, when Krishna says, wrong book. Nitam prakasha sarvasha yogamaya samavrita. I'm never manifest to the foolish and intelligent, for them I'm covered by my internal potency. So here it's mentioned that Yogamaya covers those who are foolish and prevents them from actually seeing him due to their desires. Yogamaya also helps to manifest the spiritual and material energies in different forms. It's even described in the third canto that the universal form is manifested by the help of Yogamaya. Bhagavatam 3.6.25 says, Yogamaya balobdhayam. It's the power of Yogamaya that manifests so many different forms, even in this material world. And one other thing is that Yogamaya, Krishna's own potency, he can use it to cover himself so that he can enjoy the pastimes with his devotees. Now, how exactly that works is totally beyond most of our comprehension, because we're dealing with these very deep spiritual pastimes. So how can Krishna have the power to create a covering potency that he can cover himself with at will? But this is Krishna. And Krishna is inconceivable. It's described in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, Adi 4.29. Prabhupada says, Yogamaya is the name of the internal potency that makes the Lord forget himself and become an object of love for his pure devotee in different transcendental mellows. So this is all the power that Krishna has, and he manifests through this one particular energy, Yogamaya, which is also transformed as Mahamaya. Now, more just probably as important to the devotees is how Yogamaya directly works with the devotees, and how Yogamaya allows the devotees to know Krishna and to actually come under the internal potency or the spiritual protection of the Lord. Prabhupada says in Bhagavatam 2746 purport, the Lord is unlimited and by the grace of Yoga Maya helps the surrendered soul to know him proportionally with the advance of one's surrender. So sometimes we describe Yoga Maya as the internal potency or the spiritual energy of the Lord. It's obviously one manifestation of Krishna's spiritual energies, but it's a very, very powerful spiritual energy that helps the devotee to come to know Krishna. And also, the power of Yoga Maya gives protection to the devotees. This is an important point that's described in Bhagavatam 3:23-10 in a purport. Prabhupada says, Devahuti knew that her husband was in a highly elevated transcendental position and was under the shelter of Yoga Maya. As marginal energy, a person may be under the material energy or under the spiritual energy, Yoga Maya. Kardama Muni was a great soul, and therefore he was under the spiritual energy, which means that he was directly connected with the Supreme Lord. So that's a very important point, that the devotee is under this protection, Yoga Maya, the internal potency of the Lord, and is always feeling that protection of the Lord and coming directly from the spiritual energy. So the devotee is no longer controlled by and under the under the influences of the material modes of nature, but is really directly under the spiritual energy of the Lord. And so therefore the devotee expects the protection of the Lord. This is one of the six symptoms of bhakti that are mentioned. The one rakshishyatiti vishvaso, to expect the protection of the Lord. This is one of the symptoms when one becomes a surrendered soul. From that position of surrendering to the Lord and understanding his protection and feeling that connection and protection from the Lord, the devotee can become fearless. The devotee can transcend the fear that is here in the material world. And this is Krishna describes this directly in the Bhagavad Gita, the classic famous conclusion of the Bhagavad Gita, Sarva Dharmam Parityaja. What does Krishna say? Ma Sucha, do not fear. He says, I will protect you. This is Krishna's promise. It's a very nice purport. Prabhupada writes in 1866, one should be confident that in all circumstances, Krishna will protect him from all difficulties. There's no need of thinking how one should keep the body and soul together. Krishna will see to that. One should always think himself helpless and should consider Krishna the only basis for his progress in life. As soon as one seriously engages himself in devotional service to the Lord in full Krishna consciousness, one at once becomes freed from all the contamination of material nature. So this isn't saying that after many, many lifetimes of devotional service, one may get the protection of the Lord. This is saying that almost immediately, as soon as one enters this surrendering process, that protection is there. Prabhupada said, as soon as one seriously engages himself in devotional service, he becomes free from the contamination, and that protection is given. Now, of course, we could say, what does it mean to seriously engage himself in devotional service? Obviously, this means when one is following the orders of the spiritual master, engaging in the process of bhakti yoga. But as soon as that point is there, as soon as that surrendering process comes about, then there's this qualitative difference for the devotee that he's no longer under Mahamaya. He's now under the Yoga Maya protection and guidance and direction of the Lord. So with that feeling of that connection and that fearlessness that comes about through the surrender to the Lord, one does understand Krishna's protection. And so therefore, if there is any time of distress or danger, the devotee will turn to Krishna. So we could almost inversely say that a sign of our surrendering to Krishna is how much, to what degree, do we turn to Krishna at those times. So in other words, so there's many, many ways that we can respond to different situations. And there's many alternatives in this material world that people turn to, that people take shelter of. We all know that. We've all experienced that. People take shelter of the modes of material nature. They take shelter of sense gratification. They take shelter of, you know, our, the opposite of our four regular principles. They take shelter of intoxication, etc. Or sometimes people just take shelter of their minds. You know, they just, you know, rather than a spiritual solution, they think somehow or another, I can just solve my issues. I can just think this through. I can figure it all out. I'm in control. Well, that doesn't work too well either. We usually find that that becomes a very short-lived answer to the problems of life, because the problems of material life are greater than any of us can overcome. The problems that, and the distresses that we experience to the body, to the mind, you know, are very difficult. And they can only really be overcome when one surrenders to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And when we turn to Krishna at those times of danger, distress, or whatever, you know, then the devotee feels in a safe position. That is actually our real, because it is our real position. It is the natural position of the soul. So that highest principle is to simply remember and depend upon Krishna at all times. We saw that exhibit, of course, by Prahlad Maharaj. And Prahlad Maharaj was put in danger, was threatened with even death by his father. He actually did not even pray to Krishna, please save me. He just chanted Hare Krishna, or he just prayed to Krishna, and just remembered Krishna, and Krishna saved him at every time. Now, of course, that's a very, very elevated position. And we don't necessarily expect that we are all going to be at that position. In fact, it's fairly natural to want to turn to Krishna in times of distress. That's far better than not turning, you know, to Krishna. I'm just thinking of an example that once they were talking about the Christians say, you know, oh God, please give me today our daily bread. And Prabhupada was asked about this, and he said, well, that's a material, you know, asking God for your daily bread, you know, it's materialistic in a sense that it's coming to God asking for something rather than service. He said, but 1,000 times better than not to approach God at all. So in other words, at least they're thinking of God and thinking that God is the supplier of everything and, you know, the creator of everything. So that's far better than an atheistic position that I'm just, everything is on my own. So even though the highest position would be simply to depend upon Krishna, it's natural that we are going to have some fearfulness, or just basically the natural desire to preserve the body. And that's going to be there. And so naturally, but the devotee at least prays to Krishna to help him, to save him. And that's actually Vishma Chakrabarti Thakur talks about that in his commentary on Bhakti Samriti Sindhu 1.1.11. He mentions that it's natural even for a very advanced devotee that if his life was threatened, just because we're in this body and we're so much, you know, connected with this body, it's natural for even an advanced devotee to pray to Krishna to help him or to save him. He said, but that's not our real that's not our deepest nature. Our deepest nature is to actually know that we're not the body, to not be connected with it, and simply depend upon Krishna and our relationship with Krishna in all circumstances. But it's very natural that in time of danger, a devotee would obviously think of Krishna, please help me, please protect me. And he said there's no harm in that. So, of course, that's the life and death situation, and that's natural. But the thing is, what we have to do is we have to learn to depend upon Krishna in all circumstances, large, important ones, smaller ones, day-to-day activities. So the surrendering process of the devotee means becoming dependent upon Krishna, increasing our faith in Krishna, turning to Krishna. The Krishna, that is where we turn. We don't turn other places, other areas. Of course, we use our intelligence. We do what we have to do. We have to make, you know, good decisions. You know, we are in this material world. We have particular duties that we have to do. All those things are there. You know, we're not fanatical, and we use good sense and intelligence. You know, but ultimately, even within that realm of using our intelligence, making good decisions, performing those acts that are needed, doing our different duties, always Krishna is in the back, not just in the background. Krishna's in the foreground. Krishna is there, and we're trying to surrender to Krishna, to remember Krishna. Ask You're asking Krishna, what is it that you want? How may I serve you? You know, sometimes that's difficult, but you know, also, of course, the spiritual master is more accessible and gives us, you know, more direct instruction. So one also surrenders and prays to the spiritual master for help and for guidance in those situations, because the spiritual master is the representative of the Lord. So one who has that faith in Guru and Krishna, and as that faith grows, that's part of the surrendering process and the process of spiritual advancement. When the devotee feels that advancement, then one understands more and more that one is very connected with Krishna and through his internal energy, that one becomes part of that spiritual energy, under that spiritual energy, and takes guidance from Krishna within. Okay, stop at that point. Any discussion? Chaturi?
Thank you, Prabhu. I was thinking when Krishna said that about Narada Muni, that by the appearance of a great personality, that all fear is removed. Mm-hmm. So I was thinking that when Srila Prabhupada came to this country, the devotees, there was so much fearlessness in prosecuting the Krishna consciousness movement. So there's another confirmation of what Krishna had to say.
Yeah, that's an interesting point. I think many of us experience that. I know I've definitely experienced that when Srila Prabhupada was with us, particularly, of course, Srila Prabhupada's still with us. He's always with us, and we should have that same feeling, but I think it perhaps was a little stronger, you know, because of our lack of spiritual vision. It was a little easier for us to see that when Srila Prabhupada was with us, but I really remember that feeling of fearlessness. You know, we really did feel like we could do anything with Prabhupada. And if we simply followed Prabhupada, anything was possible. I mean, I thought we were all going to become, not only we had become pure devotees, but we were going to take over the world, transform the world into Krishna conscious society probably within a few years. And, you know, we had great faith. We had great confidence. We had in Srila Prabhupada. And I remember, you know, when you're with Srila Prabhupada and like you're in a room with him or he was giving class or in a darshan like that, and you really felt like there is absolutely nothing that could happen that would be a problem. That you were completely protected. You know, whatever happened didn't matter. You know, you were with Prabhupada and everything was okay. So, yeah, that's the feeling that we need to achieve as devotees. That faith in Guru and faith in Krishna. Krishna's with me, everything like Prahlad Maharaj. Everything's okay. I don't even have to worry about this body because, you know, I'm remembering Krishna.
I think one advantage of getting older is that, you know, when you're younger, when we hear the philosophy, it's easier to take shelter of Krishna when there's distress. Mm. But I think as you get older, you know, you get smashed so much in your lifetime that it dawns on you after a while that when things are going good, you have to definitely take shelter of Krishna. Because, you know, you don't know what's around the corner.
You never know when the other shoe is going to drop, right, as they say.
And I just thought I'd point that out.
Yeah, that is, you know, of all the disadvantages of getting old, that is one of the advantages, I think, that there is some experience that's gained. And one does learn more and more to take shelter of Krishna. For one thing, we find that we hear how fallible the body is throughout our life, but it means a lot more when you're 65 than when you're 25, honestly speaking, you know, how fallible this body is and how little shelter we can actually take in it. So it more or less forces us to take shelter of Krishna. Yeah. Any other points? Yes, Prabhu. Madhu.
I'm thinking when we were talking about coming on Krishna, and I was thinking, well, intellectually, how do I do that? I mean, if it was you that I was going to take shelter of, how would I do that? So how would I do it with Krishna? And I was realizing the importance of hearing. And as I hear, hearing about how strong Krishna is, how utterly capable he is to do anything, and how intelligent and wealthy and strong he can lift, he can jump from a mountain 88 miles. Who else can do that? A person who can jump off the top of a mountain 88 miles up in the air with his brother and float down to the ground. There's a lot of faith that I can have in that person. And one who has all beauty and all strength, and all the times that he killed so many demons, and how many times when he was swallowed by a snake, and how he was able to get out of that, and all those things. And the more I hear that, then it purifies my heart, and the more I have faith in Krishna that I can depend on him. I mean, it's an actual process, and it's all about hearing. Prabhupada always talked about hearing. Hearing is so important. And the way that you develop a faith, even the Christians say that it comes through hearing. So I was just thinking that.
No, wonderful point. And you started with a question. You actually answered the question very, very nicely. Yeah, it is, you know, faith does grow from hearing. Obviously, the more that we hear about Krishna, hear his glories, and particularly faith grows when that hearing is sadhusanga, an association with devotees. That's very important, hearing from the spiritual master and advanced devotees. And all of that, you know, is put together, that faith increases. But, of course, the hearing must be with some faith. When you hear about Krishna jumping off a mountain 88 miles, that increases your faith. If you didn't have some initial faith, you might doubt, how can this person jump 88 miles? But because some faith is developed, then hearing those pastimes and hearing about Krishna increases the faith more and more. It's a great process. Anyone else? Anyone on the other side of the room?
I have a question over here.
Yes, Namamrita.
When you say that we can become fearless through surrendering to Krishna, I'm trying to understand fearless from what exactly? Because you have, for example, Prahlad Maharaj, who was protected from death pretty much. He was a great devotee. And I think within our movement, you have devotees like Kamal Krishna Maharaj or Indra Prabhu, who weren't protected like Prahlad Maharaj, if you wanted to compare to that. So that's kind of, you know, protection from material death, I guess. So, you know, when I'm trying to be fearless and surrendering to Krishna, what should I really try to be fearless from? Is it repeated birth and death? And if you could just elaborate a little bit more.
Yeah, I think you're on the right track. It's a good question. What are we actually becoming fearless from? Because we know that our bodies are mortal. Devotees are not always protected from death. And ultimately, of course, in the long run, you know, none of us will be. So that protection is not so much the material body itself, although Prahlad Maharaj's body was protected, you know, as a great example. Of course, that's part of Krishna's Leela and his pastimes. He shows how he can protect his devotee in all circumstances. But the real protection is spiritual protection. You know, it's protection from Maya. It's protection from the influences of the material energy. Now, it may be an external thing like protecting the body, but it also means probably more deeply protecting us from being influenced by Maya, by the material energy, by illusion, and always being under the shelter of Krishna, in that we're remembering Krishna, that we're basically Krishna conscious. We're thinking of Krishna, we're remembering Krishna, we're serving Krishna, and Krishna protects that devotional service. He's really protecting our bhakti. You know, and I think that's, and because that is a real situation. You know, that's who we are. When we say who's being protected, it's the jiva, the soul, you know, and that protection of the soul is always there from Krishna or his devotee. Yes, in the back.
Hare Krishna, thank you for the nice class. Just because Namamrita Prabhu mentioned that, I wonder about that sometimes, as far as the way that the devotees leave their bodies. And I have, I think, maybe a misconception sometimes that if the way seems to be more violent, that maybe that says something. I don't know if you understand what I mean. I'm just kind of wondering how to get out of that and not think like that.
I'm not quite sure I understand the question. I mean, devotees, of course, have left their bodies in many different ways, and you know, some of those were a little bit more dramatic or violent, as you say, and others weren't. And you know, Krishna has different arrangements for everybody, for every devotee, and it's hard to know and how to judge exactly what is Krishna's plan in different circumstances. One thing that I've found to be very heartening, and I think it really increases our faith, is I hear different pastimes as more and more devotees are leaving their bodies. So many stories and examples of where devotees left in very auspicious situations. And, you know, it seems like almost like Krishna had arranged for situations for those devotees, you know, to either have, you know, people chanting with them or whatever the circumstances were. There's many situations where there's almost seems to be some greater depth of realization that came about at the end of the life of some devotees. I was just hearing something recently about some devotee who had just passed away. I can't remember the details of it, but I think it was some woman who passed away recently. Okay. Well, yeah, she was one, and there was another one a couple months ago. I don't know. But at any rate, there was some story about the, you know, there was just a lot of realization at the end, and the devotee came very fearless, you know, very much ready, and you know, really to be with Krishna again. These other circumstances, you know, it's like we don't know how to explain that, you know, that may be a very sudden taking away of a devotee by Krishna, but you know, it's all Krishna's arrangement, and you know, we have that faith that Krishna is making those arrangements for the devotees for what's best. Yes, Rangavan.
Yeah, I was looking at some reunion pictures, my 49th or 50th high school reunion that I did not attend in Michigan, and curious.
It's a shame you missed that.
And the girl that was organizer kept sending me emails and Facebook messages through the year. Very wonderful person, really. Very kind and thoughtful and so many good qualities. And then I was saying, no, I'm sorry, I can't come. But I started looking at the photographs and thinking, oh, I could hardly recognize anybody, really, at this age. And as I was going through them, I was thinking, well, actually, she looks pretty good, and her hair is done. You know, they're overweight and kind of at the fag end of life, so to say. But still, there was this, you know, sentiment for my classmates, small school. Mm-hmm. And I was, you know, looking, and they showed the buffet and all that, and all the drinks in everyone's hand, all that sort of part of it. And then they showed pictures of the deceased. A class of 66 and a class of 65, and of course there was quite a few. So for me, in this conversation in class this morning, is the protection for me was from all that, all those cigarettes, all that meat, all that sinful activity, and ultimately then protection from life after this one. So for me, it was like a protection from sinful activity. Now, in their minds, those activities are not sinful because they don't have that knowledge. So protection from sinful activities and, I guess, becoming fearless in the sense that, you know, I'm confident in Srila Prabhupada's message so that when we pass on, we don't have to fear our outcome for devotees, as they say. You know, there's really no worries ultimately in the end.
I had a question for you, Phil.
I just wanted, before you go on, that was a really, really important, very good point. In fact, that is even what Krishna says in 1866, you know, vanity, all varieties, religion, surrender. I shall deliver you from all sinful reactions, do not fear. So it's all those sinful reactions that you're seeing that your classmates are incurring and you've been saved from. That's exactly what Krishna's saying. Go ahead.
Yeah, really. And I couldn't have known that. I mean, just like they don't know that. They just don't know it. So that's one of my questions to you is Krishna can cover himself up in this to Narada Muni and saying how he really wanted to kill Jarasandha. And then he covered himself so he didn't know. But you made that point about Krishna ultimately knows. But we, on the other hand, don't know. There's an expression in self-help that says you don't know, you can't, you don't know what you don't know. And so what can you do about it? Nothing, right? So what's the difference? There's such a huge difference between myself and how Krishna can do that. I mean, I can just be wandering, you know, bewildered. I just don't know what's going on, and yet it's going on. So how can I become more aware of what's going on? Really?
Well, of course, you know, Krishna's all-knowing, and we never will be, you know, so we're very small, and Krishna, of course, is very large. You know, Krishna, we have, you know, the soul within the heart. Krishna is the Paramatma, he's within everyone's heart and everywhere, all-pervading. So we can't have the knowledge that Krishna has. But of course, we can have as much knowledge as Krishna chooses to impart to us. And as we become more surrendered, and as our hearing and chanting increases, and our Krishna consciousness increases, Krishna will impart more and more knowledge, more and more realization to us. As we see, the great acharyas have tremendous knowledge and realization, and understand all sorts of things that are going on. And we saw that with Srila Prabhupada. I mean, he even knew stuff that was going on in the material world that, you know, you think, how could he have even known that? You know, so yeah, I mean, that process of knowledge is there, and it's given directly by Krishna within the heart as we surrender. So it's described that as through the process of bhakti, concomitantly causes knowledge and detachment to rise. So bhakti comes first, the process of devotion, then knowledge will come about. So we just need to serve Krishna with devotion, and that knowledge will come. Yeah. As much as he needs us to know. And the rest, we have faith. I may not know, but Krishna knows. Okay, we should probably end there. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Thank you.